Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Entering Kenmore. Doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everyone? Welcome to episode 20 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, I think we would be silly to start anywhere else besides Roman Anthony getting called up. The big three are all in the major leagues as of right now, and the vibes are better than they have been the last couple of weeks, for sure.
Yeah, our beautiful boys are here, all three of them, and they are beautiful. Roman, obviously, Monday gets the call. It was kind of a weird call up because I kind of assumed that with like prospects like that, it'll be like, we'll get the passing tweet the night before, like breaking the Red Sox are expected to promote Roman Anthony to like join them tomorrow. But no, it seems like Cora kind of said it all came together quickly that afternoon when Willier came in and they were like, oh shit, he's actually going to need longer than just a couple days off. So that kind of prompted the move. And then obviously Katie Morrison or something like that. I think her name was Wu Sox reporter for Mass Live tweeted that she didn't see him on the bus. And then that prompted Chris Smith and Chris Cotillo to look into it. And obviously he got the call up. And let me get her at correct, whoever it was. Yeah, Kate Morrison O'Day. Kate Morrison O'Day from Mass Live. Shout out. Good scoop.
Yeah. Was she the one who had the video of him like driving up?
Yeah. Driving out in whatever kind of souped up car he has. That's why he's not. Everyone's like, oh, like the only reason he's not up is because he wasn't willing to play ball on an extension. Like, dude, like, first of all, fuck you. Yeah. And number two, he got $2.5 million signing bonus and he drives that nice ass car, whatever it may be. Like, I don't think he's in any rush to, like, he's not stupid. He knows the caliber of player he is and he knows that the type of contracts that could be waiting for him in however many years if he turns out to be that caliber of player, and he's not hurting by any stretch. So I also think that's a stupid narrative to be like, oh, they're not here because they weren't willing to play ball on a cheap extension. Like, no, that's dumb. Shut up. You don't know ball.
A lot of people who don't know ball have outed themselves this week, whether that be with Roman Anthony or whether that be with other absurd takes throughout the week that I've seen.
But I mean, there's always absurd questions, stupid questions to people. Mm-hmm. It never ceases to amaze me how dumb the Boston sports media could be, because like, we're going to get into this Hunter Dobbins story, and that's not even the Boston sports media, although they have fed into it a fair amount. Like Chris Cotillo said that it was something that they had to ask about, and I'll get into it later, but the New York media, just sports media in general, just a rough week on that front for just some really brutal takes.
Yeah. And it's weird. I feel like the Boston Red Sox win two series in a row and people forget how to act. We haven't been here in a little while. It's been a dry spell for sure.
Well, when you can't just bitch and moan about the manager for 4 hours a day, it makes things a little difficult. You actually have to do your job and like analyze the games and talk about things that are difficult to talk about when you don't have a fucking clue what you're saying.
Yeah, maybe we've seen a little bit too much of that lately.
This is my flu game, so I'm up to here with it. I'm here for it.
But we, yeah, I mean, a lot of cool storylines to touch on. So, I mean, I guess we can start. We touched on Roman Anthony. He had sort of an interesting debut. I know he went hitless. I don't know if it was 0-4.
Yeah, he made that error. 5.
Yeah, that was brutal too.
Yeah, it was weird. The error was what sticks out. But again, like that's one where like he just didn't. It looked like he misplayed it a little bit. It was a weird night. It was the grass was a little wet. I'm not gonna blame the weather on it. Like that's a play that you have to make. He's also playing right field, which I feel like is weird. And Cora's explanation for it was weird because he was like, "Well, Willier played right, so he's going to be in right because we figured when we called him up, we didn't want multiple people to be out of position." But before you knew he was going to be called up, you had Sedan in right and Campbell in center. So I don't understand why him getting called up meant that Sedan magically couldn't play right anymore, especially when we know like it was May 4th was the last time that Roman Anthony played right field in Worcester. And obviously that right field in Worcester is a lot different than trying to play it in right or in Fenway Park. And I'm not saying that having to play right field in Fenway Park contributed to that error because it was just a poor angle and it was a poor play. But I did find that odd that they didn't just move everybody over to the left if you're standing in the outfield. But yeah, weird that they didn't just move everybody to the left and plop Anthony in left field.
I know, and not to mention he's been starting most of his games in left field, and I want to say Cora said something about like you don't want to start him off in the monster, but you have to imagine when everybody's healthy and Roman Anthony is a cornerstone on this team, he's going to be playing left field.
Right, and you don't want to start him off in the monster, then why were you exclusively playing him in left field in AAA for the last month plus? Like, I just don't understand. And it's not like he's never played on a monster-type structure before because I think I'm saying this right, Fluauer Field, I think it's the home of the Greenville Drive or the Salem Red Sox, one of the two, one of the A affiliates for the Sox. They have a monster out there, obviously in Portland in left field. It's not a monster, but it's a fairly sizable wall. And then in Worcester, they don't have that for whatever reason, but at other levels of the minors, they do have that. So it wouldn't be a completely foreign concept to him.
Yeah. And it's also like, if that's going to be your mainstay position, then you might as well start learning now. It's interesting to me because that makes it seem more like he's just up here for a cup of coffee. And I don't know whether or not that'll change when Willier comes back. I mean, how can you send him back down? Like, do you know how mad people would be?
You get the spark, you're finally playing well, and like we'll get into his first hit here, but like you get the spark, you get the pop from him coming up, everyone's fired up, and then Willier's healthy, who we touched on in I think it was the last episode. Willier's been bad for the last month. So you have Willier coming back and you're just like, all right, sorry, Roman. Like, and again, this just it all circles back to Craig Breslow's incomplete offseason. He spent the entire offseason trying to trade his first baseman when he didn't have any other option instead of figuring out where the fuck the top prospect in baseball was going to play.
Yep. And now we're sitting here debating over this because when Alex Bregman comes back and when Willier Abreu comes back, you have too many guys. You simply have too many guys. And you know, we can kick the can down the road as much as we want, but at a certain point, you're going to have to figure out spots for these guys because it makes no sense.
And I'm usually a strong proponent of kicking the can down the road because usually in baseball, at least definitely on the pitching side, but most of the time on the positional side too, these things tend to sort themselves out. Like we saw, Alex Bregman goes down, Marcelo comes up, Roman Anthony or Willier goes down with an injury, Roman Anthony comes up. Like it just kind of sorted itself out like that. But again, like this isn't a problem that snuck up on you, and Roman Anthony should have been on the opening day roster if you managed your offseason correctly. And now instead of going into the deadline looking like you need to add a strong number two or a potential ace, your options are much more limited with who you can deal with, but the prices are also going to be much higher because again, you spent your entire offseason trying to trade your first baseman whom you had exactly one of instead of moving one of your 18 million outfielders to pave the way for one of the best prospects that we've ever seen come through this system and have him on the and then not to mention the service time bullshit with having to worry about him getting an extra year of service time if he wins Rookie of the Year. And, like, if he's just on the opening day roster, wins Rookie of the Year, he gets the service time, but you get a pick. So you're like a-okay with that trade, which I guess evidently they weren't because they wouldn't have done it, but.
Yeah, and not to mention that Masataka Yoshida is still nowhere to be found, but supposedly I think we got an injury update either today or yesterday that he got a cortisone shot and he's been throwing from 105
feet. Yeah, there
was
a target date.
Yeah.
There was a target date for a, let me see what it is, for a rehab assignment. Which, what the fuck do you do? What are they going to do? And, like, this isn't something that we had in our notes, but I don't know if you saw the Sam Kennedy comments on Nesson.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, oh, we know when Rafi, like, when the time comes when we really need him, like, Rafi will be out there to play the field for us. Is that some foreshadowing to Yoshida getting healthy? But again, like, if that was going to be the case, then why are we doing this whole song and dance with, oh, Masa Yoshida, he's throwing to 100 feet, like why are we, and like, how are you going to take Abe Toro out of the lineup with the way he's been swinging it? It's such a weird roster, and I feel like we kind of all just brushed over it as, oh, they still need another starter, and maybe they're an arm short in the bullpen. But the roster from top to bottom pretty much doesn't make any sense as currently constructed.
Yeah, and it's just infuriating because, like we talked about, like, you could have addressed this in the offseason. And I'm a Masataka Yoshida truther. I think this team still could benefit from a contact hitter. I know I mentioned that a couple episodes ago, but even still, like, you don't have a spot for this guy. What are you going to do? You're going to rehab him and then be like, well, he's healthy now, so let's trade him for a paperclip or, you know, some sodas for the vending machine.
Yeah, like, and eat for the contract. But exactly. Then, like, why wouldn't you have done that already? I just don't understand what the plan is for him, and they haven't really said what the plan is. Like, this says, this is from our guy Bradfo. He's hoping for a rehab assignment by late June or early July.
Okay.
So that's like a couple weeks away. What is the plan gonna be? Like, presumably he'll probably need the full 20 days or whatever, I think it's 20 days the position players are allotted for rehab assignments, so presumably he'll need that, and then what? Like, who gets options? Like, we're already having the conversation of, like, when Bregman's healthy and Willier's healthy, you have two spots that you need to open up. Who goes down? David Hamilton seems like a clear option for one of them, but then you're choosing between Romy Gonzalez, Abraham Toro, and Rob Refsnyder for that other spot. And I believe all three of those would require a DFA.
Yeah, and not to mention, it seems like that would lead to one of the big three getting called down. And to me, I know people were debating whether or not Christian Campbell should go down as well. We were doing it on the last episode. To me, if you have the other two up and Christian Campbell's starting to turn a corner, I know he had a decent series or a decent week or so at this point, it's like, I don't know how much sending him down is going to do anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. If Meyer continues to swing a good bat, which obviously he has the two home runs in that series finale against Tampa yesterday, pretty much won them the series, won them the game. Almost single-handedly there. Like, if he's swinging a good bat and Campbell is still kind of hit or miss, I don't necessarily hate the idea of him going down for a little bit, but, like, it's just one of those things where, like, Trevor Story starting to put it together a little bit, but, like, either way, like, you're gonna have some difficult decisions here, and they put it off, and now you're gonna have a decision where some, like, really valuable pieces for you in Romy, Refsnyder, or Toro could potentially be on their way out the door. And could you argue that by the time that this decision, like, comes to roost, that the Abe Toro Linsanity run is over? Sure.
Could be.
Sure.
Yeah.
That certainly could be the case. It could just be something where, like I said, like, these things tend to sort themselves out for you. Like, that could just be a situation that sorts itself out. I'm not willing to say for certain that it's going to, but, like, it just bails them out again on their poor roster construction.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, I've been thoroughly enjoying Toro time. It's been a weird ride. I mean, he's given you more production than Tristan Casas ever did for the first month or so, until he obviously blew out his knee. And now you're at a point where he's batting third in your lineup pretty much every night. So I don't know. Do we think that changes? Probably. I mean, is he a 300 hitter with, like, a 900 OPS throughout this entire season? I highly doubt it.
I can't imagine so. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, obviously he's going to come down to earth at some point, but even still, are we 100% certain that Rafael Devers, and I don't even want to open this can of worms, so maybe it could just be a quick answer, but are we 100% certain he's going to play first base?
No. And I've said this before, too. I think Rafael Devers would fucking suck at first base. Like, exactly. So it's not even, like, about, like should he or shouldn't he? His ability, I would guess, is going to be poor at that position.
Mm-hmm. And I'm tired of talking about that whole thing, to be honest, so we don't have to get into it too much. But, yeah, like you said, they're kicking the can down the road pretty much as far as they can at this point. Like, we're approaching train tracks, and if you keep kicking it, then you're gonna get, I don't know, this is kind of a morbid analogy.
Yeah, but that was going down the road, but to get back to Roman Anthony and his first series.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
He's in the bigs. That, his first hit, obviously his only hit, that double down the line, is exactly, that makes me believe in the drive line approach, if you want to call it that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That they've been preaching for all this time. Because if you listen to what Breslow said, their whole approach is, well, obviously the driveline thing is bat speed, putting the ball in play and putting it in the air, hitting it hard, and swinging the bat hard. That's essentially what it is. And then when you have two strikes, to use Breslow's words, you try like hell to put the ball in play. Which is not something that's been happening. I mean, when you looking back to Monday night's loss, 4-for-23 with the bases, with runners in scoring position. I would say with the bases loaded, that would have been crazy if they had 23 plate appearances with the bases loaded.
Yeah.
But it's just not good enough. And even they scored 8 runs in that game, and yet you're still 4-for-23 with runners in scoring position. You can say, well, the pitching staff needs to be better. Zach Kelly sucks. Yes, Zach Kelly sucks. Correct. You would be 100% right in that assertion. And I know he's going around blocking everyone who says that, which I'm surprised I didn't catch the block because I was like, I never want to see this guy in a Red Sox uniform ever again. Maybe because I complimented that Yankees appearance. I was like, we'll always have that Yankees inning from last season where he comes in, bases juiced, no outs, and strands him. I just never want to see him again. But anyway, circling back to the driveline approach, they just don't do that enough with where they try like hell to put the ball in play when they have two strikes. The only guys that I've seen do it consistently is Carlos Narvaez. And you can't even say that he came up through your system. He didn't. There was one example in the Angels series where he gets two strikes and he shortens up a runner in scoring position. He shortens up, he pokes the ball to the opposite field into a gap, and they end up the Corey Perry. We'll see how that scores. The Oilers just won it in overtime. Ooh. Corey Perry was on the ice, which I did gamble on. So we'll see who ends up getting it there. But anyways, Carlos Narvaez, he pokes it to the opposite field, scores a couple runs, two strikes. And we see Roman Anthony do that for his first major league hit. He's got two strikes on him, pitches on the outside. I won't even say part of the plate because it was definitely a ball. So he takes an outside pitch and he pokes it to left field down the line for a 2 RBI double, and it ends up winning you the game. So like something is clicking down there with this approach that just isn't clicking at the major league level, which again brings me back to, they said it was Draisaitl. Hate to see it. Hopefully they change that. anyway, they change the, like, something clicking is down there, that isn't clicking at the major league level, which brings me back to my anti-Pete Fatsy propaganda. If you have a guy in Roman Anthony who's coming up and immediately putting that philosophy into play and winning you a baseball game because of it, then what's happening at the major league level that they're not able to apply it and do the same thing? Because that's literally like to a T, that's what Roman Anthony did in that at bat, and it won you a baseball game. And you can say 5 for 23 with runners in scoring position on Monday. You sweep the Rays. And obviously things are going well right now, but like every game matters at this point. You're 3 games back with 3 teams to jump, and sure, you still have 90 games, but you've gotten yourself into such a hole with what's Fitzy's stat that they needed to go to reach 92 wins, like 58 and 34 or something like that. Like that's the point where you have to be to reach, like, to be in the mix for those wild card spots. Like, what, last year it was 87 wins got you in? So, like, that's where we're at with this season, where every game counts, and you can it's worth it to nitpick things like 4 for 23 with runners in scoring position, even when you do score 8 runs a game, because it doesn't matter, because they're not going to be like, oh, well, the Red Sox scored 8 runs in a loss, let's give them a win at the end of the season. No, like, we're at the point where it could come down to 1, 2, or 3 games to making the playoffs and not. And if we can go back to so many games and be like, oh, well, they pissed this one away, like, it's going to be that much more frustrating at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think we could circle back to about 10, 15 games that they already pissed away this season.
Yeah, at least. I mean, what's their record in one-run losses now?
They won one.
Or in one-run games? The 18 one-run losses?
Yeah, maybe it's still 17 at this point, but they just won one against the Rays to win that series. Yeah. So I don't know. It seems like they're starting to turn a corner. I don't know. And I don't want to throw around the B word because we are far from that. But
no,
we are
turning a corner,
building momentum. But this team has let me down a lot this season. How much do I trust it? That remains to be seen, because
even in this turning a corner, they still don't have a winning streak. And I won't even call it a winning streak. They don't have a winning streak, period. They haven't won 3 or more games since the end of April in a row. Nope. So it's just, they'll have a chance to do that on Friday night with Garrett Crochet on the mound against the Yankees. So, like, I think that's as good of a chance as any, but, like, eventually they're going to need to string these wins together, because, like we said, it's getting late early for the Red Sox. Three teams mentioned in that Jim Bowden trade deadline primer piece, the Braves, the Rangers, and the Red Sox. It's getting late early for all three of those teams.
Mm-hmm. And neither the Braves or the Rangers seem to be turning a corner. I mean, obviously I don't follow them as closely, but the Rangers, I mean, can't hit water if
they
fall out of the boat.
Absolutely fucking rock to the Twins today.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they put up like 13.
Oh, I should have been. Arcan did the dong report, and I assume they hit a dong. Who knows?
Yeah, Adolis Garcia.
Oh, that dude hits tanks.
My guy, Adolis Garcia.
Yeah?
Well, I just have him in my Dynasty League, he's obligatorily my guy.
That's fair. I mean, that's why I like Abraham Toro, because he was on my MLB The Show team.
Yeah. See, everybody needs players like that. I mean, if you're just on one of my fantasy teams, you're just inherently my guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely fair. The other side of this building momentum of sorts is the rotation has been pretty solid. One turn through the order. All five guys, I think, went at least 5 innings. I think Hunter Dobbins probably had the least amount.
That was a weird start for Dobbins. Yeah, no strikeouts. Yes. I mean, he fucking puts his nuts on the table, obviously, which I like. I think people were ripping him for no fucking reason there. Like, everyone complains, like, oh, there's no juice to Red Sox Yankees anymore. And Hunter Dobbins is like, I would rather die than play for the New York Yankees. And everyone's like, whoa, take it easy, man. Like, obviously you shouldn't have said that. Like, why? Who gives a fuck? He's a rookie. He should know his place. Why? Who cares? Like, who gives a flying fuck what Hunter Dobbins said? And, like, the New York media, talk about living rent-free.
Mm-hmm.
a rookie on the Red Sox that Hunter Dobbins, no disrespect, he's been great. Hunter Dobbins isn't some highly touted prospect. He's not some second come. He's not DV Garcia, the pitcher who was promised. He's not any of these things. He's just a guy that emerged and has been solid for the Red Sox this year. And he wants to come out and be like, I'd rather die than play for the Yankees. Or he'd be like, listen, kid, pump the brakes on that one. Mm-hmm. And I just, I guess we can get into it now. I just think it's so stupid. Like, I wish more, I wish Garrett Crochet would come out and be like, yeah, fuck the Yankees and everything they stand for. I think Aaron Judge is a tall, ugly bitch. Like, obviously, he's not going to do that. Yeah. But, like, I just wish, like, we need more of that. Like, I want the players on the Red Sox to hate the Yankees as much as I do, because I can't stand those fucking assholes.
Yeah. And I just think New York media has this whole higher than thou attitude.
Yeah, they're such a holier, and like they just take on the persona of the Yankees. Like the Yankees act like they're such hot shit. Oh, 27 rings, this, that. Yeah. Like they have won since in what? Since 02, 01?
Yeah.
03?
'02.
Marlins.
I think 02.
Marlins 03 was the Marlins, right?
Yeah, yeah, and then they didn't win until 09.
Yeah. Yeah, so they have won since 01. Mm-hmm. Like, come on. And they act like, oh, 27 rings, 27 rings. We're so great. We don't have a single digit number left unretired. It's like, well, you have Mr. Accumulator, Derek Jeter out there. Yeah. You have Murderer Babe Ruth. Like, that's a that's a number that can get taken down.
Yeah.
Like, oh, like, I think it's ridiculous that the Celtics do it too, with so many retired numbers before anybody calls me a hypocrite. Like, but I want the players to hate them as much as I hate them. Like, that's shout out Hunter Dobbins. And then for him, like I said, it was a little bit of a weird start, no strikeouts, but like he gave up the most predictable home run of all time to Judge,
right,
on one of the worst pitches ever. And then for after that, he really settled in. And I know like other outlets have talked about it, but I can't believe Yankees fans didn't get on him more. Like, how is he's got a pretty chantable name, whether it be Hunter or Dobbins. Like, he's got a very chantable name.
Yeah.
From the side. So like, I can't believe they didn't get into him on that front, but I guess the Yankees fans have lost their juice. 20 years of losing, 20 years of getting shoved in a locker by the Boston Red Sox in every important game that you've played in. We'll do that to a fan base, I guess.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like that rivalry hasn't really had juice since Joe Kelly was beating the shit out of Tyler Austin in 2018. Yeah.
And even then, that was just like a blip. Pretty much. Like, yeah. There have been blips, but there hasn't been anything concrete since then. Pretty much.
I know, and we're gonna act like Hunter Dobbins is like the Antichrist because he's calling out the Yankees. And yeah, I don't even know, like the New York Post did some BS, like
it must have been a slow news day for Hunter Dobbins. Like, again, no disrespect to Hunter Dobbins, he has been great. He was the back page story of the New York Post. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that's pretty much just a tabloid at this point, but like, Hunter Dobbins, his dad lied about being drafted by the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And like, I think Dobbins was great. Like, I know I said earlier, like, Chris Cotillo was like, well, like, we had to ask him about it. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Hey, Hunter, the New York Post wrote a story saying your dad's a big fat liar. Thoughts? And he was just like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't fact check my dad. Like, he just told me he got drafted by the Yankees, and I was like, cool, fuck them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I mean,
it's the dumbest story of all time.
I know.
Like I said, it must have just been a slow news day because that's what we're doing. We're like, oh, Hunter Dobbins, way. Like, fucking 5 minutes ago, you wouldn't have been able to tell me who Hunter Dobbins was, so.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because I have a couple more things to get to before we preview the Yankees series, but Dobbins is going again against I think it was Rodon last time too, wasn't it?
No, Rodon was, it was, yeah.
Yeah, so the same
Sunday Night Baseball.
The same pitching matchup again. Obviously, it was in Dobbins' favor last time. We'll see how that pans out this time, but if it goes well again, then no one could really say shit.
I hope he doubles down. I saw this on Twitter. I hope he fucking drops his nuts on the table again at Fenway Park and just like turns to the Yankees dugout and goes like full Kenny Powers and is like, woo!
I mean, how sick would that be?
Yeah, that would be. I mean, he's never like that's what we need to reignite the rivalry. Is Hunter Dobbins like he should Randy Moss the Packers crowd when he when he pretended to moon them. That's what he should do as he's walking off the mound. He should just stop, point his ass directly at the Yankees dugout, and do the Randy Moss mooning. Get Joe Buck on the call to fucking start crying about it, just like he did when Randy did it.
Oh, I mean, if you get the Sunday Night Baseball crew on it again, then they'll do it anyway. But that's neither here nor there. The bottom line, the final question I have for you before we get into this Yankees preview is, do you trust this turning the corner, this building momentum, or are we cooked in another week or so?
I mean, I don't know, like, because there are still signs of it wavering. We mentioned the 4-for-23 with runners in scoring position on Monday against the Rays. It's been a consistent issue all year. On Tuesday, they still struck out 13 times. They managed to win the baseball game, but we know that that's not a recipe for success with this team. So there are signs, and obviously Walker Buehler finally puts together a good start, but we've seen him string together good starts before the injury too. So like, do you trust the pitching staff to continue to get this deep into ball games? And obviously we didn't even mention the Slayton injury, where Slayton is now progressing slower than they thought he was going to. So the signs of the bullpen deteriorating are already starting to show their head. I'd like to say I'm cautiously optimistic, so I'd like to say yes, but I guess we'll see. Like, I know that in that Jim Bowden trade deadline piece, he said that they were looking to move an outfielder for a starter and an upgrade at first base. So, I mean, that goes to show you what they think about Abe Toro, first of all, which I don't think Jim Bowden is the brightest guy out there, but I'm sure he still has some sources from when he was a GM. I think he was with the Marlins, I want to say it was. When he was working. So
imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
I'm sure he does still have some sources there, but he doesn't. I mean, like, obviously, like, if you look at the Red Sox and be like, all right, here's their roster, what do they need? You're going to be like, well, they could use an upgrade at first base and probably another arm in the rotation. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what they might be looking for and what position of surplus they might be looking to deal from. But, like, how quickly does that materialize with the 3 wild cards? It's been that much harder to make trades early. Like, I don't think we see any trades until at least the All-Star break at this point. So it's just going to be about treading water until Bregman gets back, and then hopefully he gives you another jolt. He adds some more security into that lineup. Like, right now, again, no offense to Abe Toro or the captain, Carlos Narvaez, but there's really no reason to throw Rafael Devers a strike right now. Like, okay, like, if Abe Toro gets you, then Abe Toro gets you, but we're not going to let Rafael Devers get us.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. The only other thing I had was the big bomb of a Jorge Alcala trade.
Oh, yeah, big move.
Yeah.
I don't have too much on that. They gave up Andy Lugo, who went viral on Red Sox Twitter earlier in the season for that fantastic bat flip.
Was that him?
Yeah, that was him.
that's tough to lose.
Yeah, that is. That's an aura guy that you don't necessarily want to lose. But I was reading that they have kind of cut his playing time in Greenville because they have a pretty loaded roster out there. So maybe there's more of an opportunity for him. Alcala, you're going to get him into the the non-existent pitching lab that is the Breslow Bailey Bodie pitching lab that doesn't exist, and see what happens. I know he was really good last year. This year, it's been it's an 8.88 ERA in 22 appearances. The Savant page is pretty weird. His curveball's trash. His changeup is trash, and he doesn't really seem like he knows where he's throwing it. But weirdly enough, Twins fans were like, "Oh, like the second we get rid of Jorge Alcala, he's going to become the best reliever in the league." Like, it seems like they like when he flashes, he looks like he has that type of potential, and then it kind of all falls apart. So I guess it's a low risk. You give up a whatever prospect and you DFA a whatever pitcher in Brian Van Bell, who was up for 3 days and you didn't even use him. Mm-hmm. So like it's pretty low cost. Like I said, I don't think we're going to be seeing Alcala trotting out there in the eighth inning anytime soon, but you put him in a couple blowouts, see what happens, and see if he can tinker with his arsenal. It seems like they, if I would guess, they're gonna throw the curveball in the trash based on what I know about Andrew Bailey and have him go sinker slider, and then from there see if they can develop the change, which has been bad. But again, like if this is a guy, if it doesn't work out, I think you just DFA him in a month.
Yeah, low, like you said, low risk, potentially high reward there. And nonetheless, you have some bullpen help in a bullpen that has been showing signs of being overworked.
As the depth in Worcester kind of thins out a little bit. Like Josh Winkowski going to the 60 day was a I can't remember what the counter move was for Winkowski to the 60 day, which it actually ends up working out to be a better deal for him because he gets major league pay and service time while he's on the 60 day. So good for him on that front, I guess. But he's on the 60 day and he also sucks. He's also Josh Winkowski. Obviously, we just saw the Robert Stock experiment. Zach Penrod still working his way back from his injury. Same with Chris Murphy, but those are two lefties. So, like, you're going to carry five lefties in your bullpen? Or I guess it would be four again after you get rid of Newcomb last month. But, yeah, the depth in the bullpen specifically in AAA is starting to thin out. And, like, Robert Stock comes up. He can't find the zone. So, I mean, if anything else, it's bullpen depth. Those are the only moves you're going to see right now. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing substantial is going to happen.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. I wonder how quickly Alcala is pitching for the Red Sox. It seems
they've already made the move to add him onto the 40-man, and I believe he's on the active roster now.
Yeah.
So could be as soon as tomorrow night.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I want to see him in tight scenarios right now, but I mean, you have Bernardino throwing his glove.
Not tight. Not going to be a tight scenario. They're just going to – I said it last episode. They're going to get to Yarborough. Ryan Yarborough fucking sucks, and the Red Sox see him well, and they just shell him every time they see him. So they're going to get to him again tomorrow, and Garrett Crochet isn't going to have Christian Campbell freeze on a tailor-made double play ball that costs him two runs, and he's going to go out there and shove because, I mean, that was really – like, he got some really shoddy defense. I know Lou and the Wills were talking about it, but like he just as easily could have gone seven shut as whatever he ended up going, seven innings, five runs, which from earned run perspective was his highest allowed total of the year.
And even still, his ERA is sub three, so.
Yeah, which like, I mean, like this is a guy that he's going to be a perennial Cy Young contender for the next however long. Thank God he signed. I mean, imagine the talk if he wasn't signed. It would be... It would be nauseating.
The season would feel a hell of a lot worse, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. You didn't answer it. Do you think they're going to continue this? Are you confident in there?
No. No, to be honest. I know I said it last episode when I was kind of losing my mind, but I've tried to stay optimistic about this team all year. Until they dropped a series against the Angels. And at that point, I'm just ready to get hurt again. I hope I'm wrong, but looking at the schedule, you got three against the Yankees, then you got three against the Mariners, three against the Giants, so all pretty good playoff-caliber teams at this point in the year. Then you have three against the Angels again, who I can't be like, oh, that's three free wins because it wasn't last time.
You get to play the Angels, yeah. That's a team you're looking up at.
Yeah, so what I'll say is I am not super confident yet. If this West Coast road trip goes well, then I'm willing to reconsider that.
This is actually, it's something I meant to text you the other day. I know we're big Mariners guys for whatever reason. Well, I know my reason is because they play on the West Coast and I can usually gamble on them. I quit the Mariners. I'm out. They really suck. They're so fucking bad.
Jerry DePoto. If only they had some outfielders from a team with a surplus of outfielders.
Jaron Duran. Jaron Duran. Sorry, I'm sick. My flu game. I've said it before. Jerry DePoto's a moron, but they seem like a match made in heaven from a trade partner perspective, and it just doesn't seem like they're in any interest in they have any interest in adding a bat. Whatever reason it may be. But yeah, I'm out on the Mariners. They fucking suck. They're so bad.
I mean, they had a Linsanity run. Their offense had a Linsanity run. Maybe similar to what Abraham Toro's doing right now. But you look at the Mariners' offense on paper, and obviously this isn't a Mariners podcast, so I'll get off my soapbox real quick.
2-8 in their last 10.
Exactly. Like, that offense, you always kind of knew it was going to come back down to earth. They were playing pretty good baseball to start the year. I don't know if they'll make the playoffs anymore.
Realistically, they have three good players on offense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, you're just not going to survive like that. So, like, hopefully, I don't know how it lines up. I know that Logan Gilbert should be back in the next rotation for them. So, I would guess that you'll probably see him on Monday or Tuesday because that's who they play first, right?
Yeah. I have ESPN probables of Wu and Castillo, and they don't have anyone tabbed for Monday yet, so that could be where
that's probably going to be where Gilbert. Yeah. That'll be my guess, because I know he went 6 in his rehab appearance, because since quick soapbox on my fantasy team, my three best pitchers were Nathan Eovaldi, Michael King, and Logan Gilbert.
Oh, that's
all tough. On the shelf. Yeah. I started out 6-0, and now I sit 6-5.
Oh God.
Not great. As is one of my favorite Alex Cora drops. Yeah, not great. But when you have those three caliber arms on the shelf, it's hard to win baseball games. Turns out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even fantasy baseball games.
I love the tangents we get on when we were originally previewing a Yankee series.
Yeah, the Mariners were previewing the next series after the Yankees. We're all over the place.
I mean, we won't check in again until after that Mariners series, so I guess it makes sense. I guess game two is Hunter Dobbins versus Carlos Rodon again. I don't have much to say on it. Rodon didn't look great last time out against the Red Sox, so we'll see.
Yeah. And typically when you see the same pitcher in quick succession like we're having here for two games this series, it doesn't go well for the pitcher usually. Mm-hmm. Usually it's enough, or it's a like small enough turnaround where you can kind of remember where things go and like figure some things out a little bit quicker. So I don't love that for Hunter Dobbins by any stretch, but again, like, it was a weird start on Sunday for him. So like I said, no strikeouts. Like, how many times do you see no strikeouts from a starter in today's baseball? A lot of soft,
especially through five innings.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't feel great about that. I think Crochet is probably a pitcher where he's good enough to overcome that. But even then, like, we know he had some batted ball unluck or unluckiness, but I don't know, whatever the word might be. I think he's good enough to overcome that. But Ryan Yarbrough, Hunter Dobbins, I don't know if they are. Carlos Rodon, I guess it remains to be seen, because he had been great up until that point, but we've seen him be bad before in a consistent stretch, and we've seen him be bad against this team this season, literally a week ago. So it's hard to say that they're not going to get to him again. And then obviously Max Fried going on Sunday against Day Game Bayo. It feels like you need to win the first two to win this series before you get to Fried, who's obviously been fantastic after, I won't say spurning you, because he got more money, and also, like, Freed, we all know the story. Freed signs with the Yankees for 8 years, $208 million, I think it was, because it was $1 million more than David Price got for the richest contract for a lefty in baseball history. And then that kind of caused Craig Breslow to panic and text the White Sox at like 3 a.m., you up? And the next day, Garrett Crochet is a Red Sox, and I don't think anybody in their right mind would rather have Max Fried for the next 8 years over Garrett Crochet. So it works out, but yeah, he's been fantastic this year. The strikeout stuff is fully there, fully back, which is not something that we always saw in Atlanta. He was a little bit more of a pitch-to-contact guy, especially with the injuries, and we know the Red Sox struggles against left-handed pitching. So that circles one where I feel like they might be in danger.
Yeah, I agree, especially because we'll probably see the lefty lineups all throughout this series, which are usually pretty bad.
Yeah, and we didn't touch on that. The lefty lineup did score 8 against Tampa, or did actually yeah. No, did they? No, they didn't. They went off against someone that we bitched about it. It must have been that Sunday night game.
Against Rodon, maybe?
Yeah, that was definitely it, where we bitched about the lefty lineup, and then they were great. And I know that's been a big point of contention for everybody with, like, oh, why isn't Meyer and Anthony? The listeners of this podcast have known for weeks that when Meyer and Anthony get called up, they are going to be not facing lefties, because anybody who's been paying attention to Alex Cora for the last, how long has he been here? 8 years?
Yeah, give or take.
7 years, yeah. 7 years, so 6 years minus the suspension year. So, like, I mean, we were doing this with Rafael Devers, with Eduardo Nunez. Like, they still weren't letting Tristan Casas hit lefties. Willier Abreu, same thing. They don't let him hit lefties. The only guy they let hit lefties is Jaron Duran, which is weird because even he kind of sucks against lefties. I'll pull up the Red Sox stats tweet about it, too. It's so weird, and I'm very much on the side of I understand why they don't want him to face lefty or them to face lefties, being Meyer and Anthony, because they're right. Like, I mean, they know the data. If you're a good enough lefty, if you're like a high quality lefty, you're just already in the big leagues, and they have you pitch out. Like, even if you're going to be a starter, you just come out of the bullpen to start. Like, look at what teams did, or not teams, look at what the White Sox did with Chris Sale and Garrett Crochet. They two nasty lefties, so they just brought them up out of the bullpen to start, and then they slowly shifted them and built them up as starters. Like, if you have really nasty shit, you're up pretty quickly after hitting double A if you're throwing from the left side of the plate. So they really haven't seen any, like, truly disgusting lefties. But I am also of the belief that the only way you're going to get better at it is by facing them. Like, Yusei Kikuchi and Tyler Anderson, Marcelo Meyer needs to be in the lineup against those guys. Carlos Rodon, fine. If you don't want to play him, then okay, I'm fine.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
With that, Max Fried on Sunday, if you want to go with the lefty lineup against the guy who, I don't know how Skubal pitched tonight, but I mean, Max Fried and a guy who is top three minimum in Cy Young odds right now. You don't want to play him against them, fine, but like Tyler Anderson has reverse splits. He's worse against lefties than he is righties. And Marcelo Meyer's not in the lineup there. Like, I understand, like, yes, we're trying to win ball games right now, which is what they keep trying to say, like, in retort to, well, the only way they're going to develop is if they play against them and look, well, are you trying to win ball games now or next year? You can do both. Like, there is a middle ground here. I understand that in this landscape, there isn't any room for a middle ground. Like, not, you can't be the reasonable person in the middle. It can either be at fuck Alex Cora. Why the fuck are they not playing against lefties? Or they shouldn't play against any lefties, period. Like, I find myself firmly in the middle. I think against Ryan Yarbrough tomorrow, they should both be in the lineup. If you want to sit them the next 2 days, I don't have as much of a problem with that. The only issue I have is with the usage of them coming off the bench. Like, if you're going to be super liberal with pulling the, I guess one example where I did have a problem with it was on Monday in extra innings. You lift Roman Anthony for Rob Refsnyder to face Ian Seymour, who was making his major league debut. If they had Durham and Worcester across their chests, Ian Seymour's pitching around Roman Anthony.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So I just would have rather, like, that's a situation where I would have rather kept them in. But against Max Fried, I'm like, well, you know, I don't hate that. And I don't I think they'll be in the lineup tomorrow, and I don't think they'll be in the lineup the rest of the series against the Yankees. But be liberal with them pinch hitting. Like, if the Yankees put in a righty for Abe Toro, Romy Gonzalez, Rob Refsnyder pocket, go to them. Like, don't be afraid to be like, oh, like, like, I feel like that's where Cora's kind of faltered. Like, on days where Marcelo's on the bench, like, we haven't seen it with Anthony yet, but, like, days where he's on the bench, like, he's just on the bench. Like, they'll go to, like, David Hamilton to pinch hit before him.
Yeah. One other thing, I don't really have anything to add on the lefty lineups. I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you said. Like, there's no better way for them to learn how to hit lefties than by hitting lefties. And also, I know people like to call on Roman Anthony's splits in the minor leagues, but like you said, like, they've never seen this quality of left-handed pitching. But the only other thing I had was, and you mentioning David Hamilton reminded me of it, they keep taking Christian Campbell out of the lineup in like late innings and bringing in David Hamilton as a defensive substitution. If that's the only reason he's on your roster, get him the fuck out of here, dude. Like, I'm tired of it.
Well, I think he will be once. Yeah. Like, as the situation starts to evolve and if things don't keep breaking, like, perfectly for them to have things, like, the way, like, Bregman goes down and you have Meyer ready. Like, I think that's the first obvious move. Like we mentioned earlier, like, it starts to get a little bit hairier after that because it seems like the most likely path is one of the big three not sticking. And like, David Hamilton's definitely a defensive upgrade over Christian Campbell, but if his only value to you is coming off the bench for speed and slightly above league average defense at second base, I fail to see how he has a roster spot for too much longer, especially when I know your guy, Romy Gonzalez, you've been toting this for quite a while. The only reason he is even on a major league roster is because he's decent speed off the bench. So, like, you have guys that can fill that void very easily.
Yeah, I've kind of been eating my words on that. He has been pretty good as a lefty specialist this season, too. He had some big hits in the... Was it the Yankee series? It must have been.
Yeah, and he pinch hit for Marcelo in that Monday game against the Rays and immediately laced a double oppo down the line to score two and tie it. So he's been really good.
He has been. I definitely was a little bit annoyed having to clip his highlights.
It's always tough because you don't want to be like, you know, I'd be like, oh, fuck this guy, because at the end of the day, he's helping the team win some ball games. But, like, also, I hate being wrong, especially on things like that. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so not ideal, but like I said, at the end of the day, he's helping you win ball games. So
keep him up here. Like, I think he has a Linsanity run just like Toro has.
Are you just hoping Toro cools down and he's the move?
Like, honestly, no, because I like the switch hitter. I think he's very fun to watch. Like, if he's even performing to above what you think Rafael Devers could do there, if he's better defensively, because he definitely is, he's actually played the position before, then I think there are moves to be made elsewhere.
the number one thing that is, and I know that Nick Sogard talked about this when I think it was on a 2-minute grill with Bradfoe on the pregame show, that the toughest thing for him about playing first base is not going for balls to your right, which would be the second baseman's wall, but all of them do it. I forget when it was in this Rays series that Toro went to go play for a ball. I was like, the runner ended up being safe because whoever was pitching was late getting to the bag because they didn't realize that they had to cover it because Toro misplayed it. And yeah, it's just, that is quickly becoming my number one pet peeve that the Boston Red Sox do when they're in the field, is seeing the first baseman go to play a ball that is like pretty clearly the second baseman's ball.
Yeah, but my thing is, like, if you put Devers there, he's probably going to do that more than some of these guys.
Yeah, or if he's not going to do that more, like, he's not going to dig out balls. Don't get me wrong, I am not a proponent of getting Rafael Devers a first baseman's
man, yeah,
telling him to get out there. It makes your lineup work a little bit, like, a little bit better. But even then, like, you still have the same log jams that you have. Like, okay, what are you going to do? Are you going to platoon Masa Yoshida and Roman Anthony at DH? They're both lefties. So, like, that platoon doesn't work. So, like, it just, the roster still doesn't make sense. I think it's going to have to come with a trade of some kind. Like, when you're talking about a caliber trade like this one with, like say, a Willier Abreu going out the door or a Jaron Duran going out the door, I think maybe it makes things a little bit easier to get a deal done earlier because that's a deal that seemingly would get done between two contenders. Just looking to swap a couple positions of need. But like when your position of need is starting pitching, like, okay, you and however many, like what, there are three teams that are not in the firmly in the playoff race right now, the White Sox, the Rockies, and the A's.
Don't want any of their pitching.
Yeah, like, so, like, those are the three teams that don't think they're in it, and you always need pitching. So, like, what? Like, do you go, like, I'm not trading Willier Abreu in division for Zach Eflin.
No.
Like, fuck no. Like, are the Diamondbacks willing to give you half a season of Zach Gallen for Willier Abreu if they punt on the season right now? Are you willing to give up 4 years of team control on Willier Abreu for potentially half a season of Zach Gallen?
Oh, absolutely not. No.
Like, it's just, it's one of those things where, like, it really does feel like it's the Mariners or nothing right now as far as a trade goes, because they're kind of in a spot where you were a couple weeks ago, or I guess 2 weeks ago, where it was like, okay, fuck, the season is slipping away, like, we need a spark, we need a jolt. Like, if you're the Mariners, do you just, like, call up the Red Sox and be like, okay, we're willing to play ball, we're getting Logan Gilbert healthy, we're getting George Kirby healthy. I know Bryce Miller just went back on the injured list with, I think it's elbow inflammation, so you're losing him, but you're getting two guys healthy and working back, like, we're ready to listen on, like, I don't want Emerson Hancock, but he's been pretty good for him this year. So, like, we're willing to listen on Brian Wu. Like, is that something they're more interested in? Based on the way DePoto has operated, I would say no. But, like, I think we covered this a lot over the course of the offseason. Like, and this goes for Duran, too. I'm not trading Willier Abreu for, like, anything that's not a at least semi-controllable starter, whether it be a guy with, I want to say Wu has 4 years as well, or a guy that has at least, like, well over a year. I'm not doing it for a Zach Gallen rental, and I'm certainly not doing it for, like, Merrill Kelly or something like that.
No, and that brings me back to, I hope the front office doesn't get desperate, because you're kind of in a tough spot. Like, you should have addressed this in the offseason, which
we've mentioned before. Well, that's exactly why.
Yeah.
Too. Because everybody, like, teams are, like, that's what the trade deadline is for. Like, that's the point of the trade deadline, is you're desperate to get this, that, and the other thing, and you overpay because of it. Like, if you sort this out in the offseason, there's way more suitors because teams aren't out of it yet. And there's way more options available, especially when you're looking for starting pitching.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that may sacrifice wins this year because they mishandled last offseason addressing it.
And that's the thing that pisses me off about Breslow. He always says, like, we're not going to sacrifice wins in the future for wins today. Why? That's how you get stuck where we're stuck. Like, mm-hmm. at some point, you have to look at where you are as a team and say, it's time to push these chips in. We don't have enough spots for the guys that we have here. And we have four major league caliber outfielders.
Yeah.
Potentially five, if you believe in what the password is doing down there. So, like, I just don't understand, like, oh, we're not going to sacrifice wins tomorrow for wins today. You have to at some point. If you just keep saying that year after year, then you're going to continue to find yourself in where the Mariners are. You're going to continue to find yourself where the Mariners are, where, oh, they're right in the mix. They're right in the mix. And then you end up missing the game, the playoffs by one, two, three games at the end of the season. Like, at some point you have to get out of baseball purgatory and push your chips in. Identify who. That's what Dave Dombrowski was so good at doing when he was here. Identifying the pieces that you're keeping, your Andrew Benintendi, your Rafael Devers, those guys that the White Sox came calling for when it came time to trade for Chris Sale. You identify the guys that you're willing to keep if you want to get not deeper into the farm system, but some other names like Manuel Margot was a top 100 prospect, top five organizational. You deal him for Craig Kimbrell. Like, when you look back at the deals Dombrowski made, how many players that he traded went on to be productive major leaguers?
Not many.
Like, Yoan Moncada is still kicking around. He's actually having a little bit of a resurgence here for the Angels before he got hurt. But, like, aside from that, like, Luis Alejandro Basabe was another piece in that deal. Michael Kopech is a reliever now. Like, the guys that he identified as guys he was willing to move, he was right about. So if you have that conviction in these guys that are saying that you're saying, all right, Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, Christian Campbell, these are the guys we want to build around.
Yeah.
Then you should be listening on everybody else. And I know people aren't going to be happy about potentially trading Jaron Duran, but if that's the best offer that they get, and like, then, and that's a move that you have to make. Like, eventually you have to push your chips in and go for it, because at the end of the day, we're trying to win championships here. And maybe the fan base in Seattle is happy with kind of pussyfooting around the playoffs every year. I don't think they are based on their Twitter fan presence.
Nope.
But if they just make the playoffs annually, they're happy with that. This isn't that. We're trying to win championships here. And you don't win championships by being like, oh, we're not going to sacrifice wins tomorrow for wins today. No, you have to. I always across the board say this. Whatever the trade is, does not matter if you win a title. Doesn't matter. The Cubs gave up Gleyber Torres for half a season of Aroldis Chapman, and he went right back to the Yankees. Doesn't matter. They won a title. They won their first ring in 100 and whatever years, 116 or whatever years. Like, it doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter if you sacrifice wins tomorrow and win a championship today, because you know how much fucking fun winning a championship today is?
Oh, it's really cool.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
It's sweet.
Wouldn't that be fun? It would, man. But if we're not sacrificing, like, at what point do we draw the line? Like, we think Justinson Garcia could help us win ball games in the future, so we're not going to trade him. Okay, so then we're going to have what? We're just going to continue to pile up outfielders? Like,
from the guy who said save the password.
We're saving the password. We're saving the password. Don't worry. It just doesn't feel very likely. But
No, it doesn't, unfortunately.
But, like, at a certain point, it's just time to push those chips in and figure out where to go. Like, part of the great part of having a top five farm system in baseball is feeling like you have the pieces to go out and trade for whoever you want. I mean, I saw a list the other day, like, it was in the Bonin article, not the list, but the report, that the fact that the Pirates don't want to trade Paul Skeens isn't going to stop teams from sending serious offers. And I saw it was a fantasy baseball analyst that did the list, but he said, like, realistically, I think there are four teams that have the prospect ammo to make a realistic package for Paul Skeens, and the Red Sox are on that list. Like, part of the benefits of having that, like, being on that list is being able to go out and trade, like, knowing that you have a package that would at least make the Pirates think about trading you Paul Skeens. Now, obviously, that's an extreme example, but, like, that's the type of farm system we have. Like, where it's like, okay, we can realistically go out there and land potentially any player we want.
Yeah, Yeah, and I'm kind of tired of waiting for it. Like you said, like it seemed like they needed to make a trade for a long time, and here we are still
all off season. And instead, they tried to trade the first baseman that they didn't have any depth of.
Now we have like six outfielders that are good, because I don't know where you put Yoshida, but he is technically an outfielder. I mean, he's
And they're going to make him an outfielder. Like, they wouldn't be, they wouldn't be doing this whole song and dance of, oh, he's throwing up to 100 in whatever feed. He's doing this. He's doing that. If they weren't going to try him in the outfield.
Yeah. I have a conspiracy theory on that. That they're, if he does come back and play more innings for this team, they're never going to put him in the outfield.
That would be very funny in the, like, if you, like, look back at the history of Masataka Yoshida. First, it was, so he signs the deal. Everyone's like, that's way more than we thought he was going to get. He is not a good fielder. And then he went out there, and I wouldn't say that he was a bad left fielder. He was an okay left fielder. And the metrics weren't great. But, like, some of the metrics can get fucky, especially with the monster. Because I know your outs above average is calculated by your catch probability. And sometimes balls off the monster will have, like, a 97% catch probability. Because it doesn't factor in anything. Well, I guess it's 95% because it only works in intervals of 5. But, like, it only takes into account your launch angle and exit velocity. It doesn't account for the 37-foot wall that the ball might hit before it would land in a glove. So it kind of gets fucky there. And then in that offseason, they had Tom Warner being like, his defense is so much better. Like, our internal metrics say that he could win a gold glove pretty much. And then last year, they're like, you want him to go. It's kind of like how they treat Meyer and Anthony facing lefties. Like, you want him to go out there in the outfield. He could die out there. Like, that's what they do with the lefties. You want Marcelo to face a lefty? He could die up there. Is that what you want? Like, they did the same thing with him last year after touting that he was actually not that bad defensively. Mm-hmm. And now this year they've completely 180'd again. And they're like, oh no, it was actually just only because of the shoulder injury that we didn't want him out there.
Yeah, I feel like we may have touched on Yoshida maybe a little too much this episode, but it's such
There's
an
never
interesting
touching on King Masa.
Hey yo,
King Masa, with not enough touching on King Masa.
No, I kind of agree. I love me some Masataka Yoshida, man. It just the vibes.
Talk about
off.
A vibes guy.
Yeah.
All time vibes guy. All time aura guy. And everybody loves him except for the front office. Like,
I know.
You would see pictures of like Roman Anthony and Worcester taking BP and like a Masa Yoshida cutoff. It's like, how the fuck did he get that? Like, he's in AAA.
And where do I get one?
Yeah, right? Like, I mean, his rookie year, we were doing giveaways with the Masa Yoshida blow-up dumbbells. Like, how did we get to this point with Masa?
I know, man. It's unfortunate. And I know we said we were going to shoot to go until midnight, and it is now 12:24. But I feel like we both needed the extra discourse on this team.
Yeah, definitely. Series prediction for the Yankees?
I will go 2 out of 3. They'll win the first two, lose the finale.
Yeah, I'm gonna tail you on that one. I got the Sox going 2 out of 3. Team total tomorrow, the Zach Flu game, lock of the day against Ryan Yarbrough. They're gonna fuck him up again.
All right, I might have to tail that as well. Either way, thanks so much for listening, as always, and we'll check in with you guys again next week.
See ya.